How does this go? I get grapes in my eyes.
Here we go. Hey guys, welcome back to Zero Credits, the show where we talk about things. My name is Henry.
And I'm John.
And together we're Henry and John. We come to you today bearing gifts.
We do. What gifts?
The gifts of a new episode of Zero Credits with Henry and John.
I think that's really only one gift, but I guess if you, like, stretch it out and take it apart, there are many gifts hidden within.
What I want our listeners to do is to pause the podcast throughout their time listening to it so that each time they start it, it's like opening a new gift.
And every time you pause it, you say, I got a gift.
Yeah, say that.
Aloud.
On the bus, in the library, in the gym, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And you know, you guys, the letters just keep pouring in.
Yeah, one after the other. Soon we'll have a full sentence.
And they just keep demanding, in one word, that they want...
more?
They want more of our award-winning first segment.
What are we doing?
What are we doing, Henry?
I think we're doing some good things.
Are we?
Not good as in, like, Superman does good, but mm-hmm. good as in they're not technically evil.
I mean, how much good does Superman do if you think about it? Anyway.
I don't want to get into this.
I feel like... okay, podcast listeners, I'm going to be totally honest with
you.
Here
we go. John's going to go off the rails again.
I never promised that we'd try to maintain like a positive face to this podcast. I think today, kind of a shit show.
Oh, you think we're not going to deliver? Or what we're going to deliver is not going to deliver?
No, I just didn't have a good day.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know what would make your day better?
What?
Shoes.
I actually bought a new pair of shoes. That was, that happened before.
Well, yeah, that was before your shitty day.
Yeah. Do I need to buy new shoes again?
Well, no. I forgot. You're wearing your new shoes now.
They're very nice.
Are they Vans?
They are Vans.
They look like Vans.
They say Vans on them.
And, the important thing about these shoes is they have a flat surface.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you're lifting weights, something good happens.
Yeah, if you're a cheap person who doesn't want to buy weightlifting shoes, you buy Vans. Or Converse, if you're a monster.
Vans seems like they're coming back in style.
I think Vans have always been, like, the undercurrent of shoe culture. Everyone always owns Vans.
I've never owned Vans.
Well,
I always thought they were a skateboard shoe.
They did start as a skateboard shoe with the whole off-the-wall thing, I think, but...
is that like Chuck Taylor's, where... basketball shoes back in the day?
Yeah.
Now they just call them Chucks and everybody who has them?
Yep.
I've never owned a pair.
Why?
I only buy New Balance. And that's not a joke. That's just a real thing that happens.
That's just something that like a 70-year-old person does. They're like, I only buy this brand of hot dogs because I don't know.
Look, if I could bring one old world tradition with me into the blazing hot future, it's brand loyalty. And New Balance is literally the only type of shoe I've ever worn.
New Balances are really good.
They're very comfortable.
They're a solid shoe.
I give them 5 out of 5s.
Same.
But then again, they're shoes. Do they make bad shoes?
Yeah.
They do?
Yeah.
Okay, you're right, they do.
Yeah, no, the thing about shoes, 100%, you get what you pay for. Up yeah. to a certain amount. Like, if you're paying more than, I don't know, $150 for shoes, if you're not buying super nice work boots or something, you're getting ripped off somewhere down the line, or you're paying for prestige, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the average pair of shoes costs like 60, yeah. $40. That's a decent shoe.
Yeah, somewhere from 60 to 80, I'd call that, like, yeah. the shoe range.
I mean, you want to get them on sale. You go to, like, the Academy, because... mm-hmm. why else would anyone go to an academy?
Yeah.
And you go to their shoe place because people have forgotten they sell shoes, mm-hmm. and everything's like $20 cheaper.
I often forget that Academy sells anything.
Yeah. I often walk in wanting a degree
mm-hmm.
from like for in math, mm-hmm. and they're just like, no, you can buy a kayak.
Yeah,
they're not a real academy.
They're not?
No.
Man.
They're sports and outdoors.
I got swindled on this professorship.
The right stuff, the right price.
Is that their slogan?
Every day.
That's a really dumb, awful slogan.
Yeah, well, I mean...
That sounds fake.
They're not an academy or anything.
Oh, you're right.
Alright, so... That's what we're doing.
That is what we're doing.
We're talking about shoes.
You know what I think about when I think about shoes?
What do you think about when you think about shoes?
Just how... I've been real unmotivated.
Yeah?
Over the last 2 days, and I don't know why, and I feel like this is kind of a companion piece to our talking about how spring fills people with this kind of...
creative buzz?
Yeah.
Or it, this urge?
It makes even my low moments feel like buzzed with disappointment.
Oh, man.
Because if I were to be unproductive in winter, whatever.
Because it's winter, and it's natural to be unproductive because the winter tries to kill us.
Yeah, so my spring lows are very deep.
You know, I feel sorry for you, John. I honestly haven't felt low since this past weekend. Like, I've been on a really good upswing. It's been nice.
Yeah, it is nice. I was on the upswing for a little while. I'm not in a down, super down place yeah. right now.
But what you're saying is even, like, a little sort of heading toward low feels that much greater because yeah. it's spring.
Everything's magnified in the spring.
Yes.
You know, your little down ticks are canyons. And it's all right. I'm doing all right. I'm doing a lot of pretty quality thinking. Not producing anything that's worth a damn, but whatever.
I saw on Facebook the other yes. day you, like, took apart a guitar?
Yes.
Is that what happened?
I'm trying to refinish my guitar and redo the electronics inside of it to make it sound a little bit better. Because I bought this guitar for about $150 forever ago. And it's a pretty nice Ibanez electric guitar. However you pronounce it.
It's not Zenith.
And, that's how you pronounce it. Thank you. But no, it doesn't have a great sound, and the finish is all cracked. But I just love playing it. Just the shape of the neck and the shape of the guitar body are just great, and I love it. And the weight is perfect. So I hadn't really bought an electric guitar after that, just because I love noodling on that stupid son of a bitch.
Is that its name?
It is now.
All right.
But I decided I really hated the way it looked on all those stupid chips in its paint. So I'm going to refinish it. Maybe put some new electronics in or just fix the connections that are in there. And just do general maintenance on it, which is hard to do.
It's a delicate instrument.
Repainting a guitar is hard. Because the finish they put on modern guitars is like glass. It's like invincible glass. It's like bulletproof glass.
It's unbreakable?
It's unbreakable.
Starring
They're
Bruce
alive,
Davis.
Oh. So, here's how you remove the finish on electric guitar.
Yeah?
You put a heat gun on it.
A heat gun?
And you keep that heat gun on it until one of two things happens. Either the scraper that you're constantly scraping with removes like a fraction of a millimeter of paint every few seconds. Or the section gets too hot and the clear coat cracks and explodes in these little chips of clear coat that are boiling hot.
That sounds safe and friendly.
It's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are different finishes for guitars that are easier to get off. This one, though, real son of a bitch.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
And I didn't like electric guitars for a while, but they're fun. You know? It gives me a little thing to do. But
you sound like you're a retired spinstress.
Pretty much.
It gives me something to do on the weekends when the children don't call.
I feel like a lot of people have those type of things going on, though, where they're like, this is my life, and this is what I'm in school for, or went to school for, and this is just, like, this little thing I do every once in a while. It's kind of creative, kind of productive, it requires a skill. But, I mean, it's not a bad thing. I sound like I'm downplaying it, but it's good to have hobbies.
Yeah, they keep us interesting.
Yeah.
When we meet strangers.
Mm-hmm. When I meet a stranger, I'll say, how about an electric guitar?
And they'll be like, what? Because you are weird.
And then they'll be cool with me, because being weird is cool.
Once you repeat yourself, clearly. Yeah, no, they're still going to be like, what?
You know, I don't think we have the same perception of the human race.
What do you mean?
I think the human race would understand what I meant.
Oh, I view the human race as a bunch of ghost-inhabiting skeletons that are trapped by a prison of skin. And the ghost skeleton's only dream is to be free from its fleshy prison, and so it tries to kill itself slowly by eating fast food and alcohol.
See, I prefer to think of humans as living flesh prisons that are keeping us from the skeleton hordes.
Oh, so, like, the human race protects us from the skeletons?
Yeah, skeletons are the enemy.
But no, that's wrong. Your thought of school is complete garbage.
Let's fight about this for thousands of years.
Alright, see ya.
Yay, jingoism. Jingoism?
Is that when you save five of them in a level and you get a jigsaw puzzle?
No, it's when you take one belief out from the tower and the whole tower just falls over.
Oh, like in the game Jenga.
Oh, right, that's Jengaism.
Oh, that has nothing to do with Banjo-Kazooie.
Oh, Banjo-Kazooie.
Jinjos.
Jinjo, what?
You collect five Jinjos and you get a Jiggy.
What? What the fuck are you talking about?
Jinjoism.
What the, God, fuck, shit.
Sorry, anyway. I'm just in a really good mood.
What's wrong with your arm?
It itches like crazy, I'm sorry. Plus I was spelling my name by, like, putting,
Are you okay?
I'm fine!
For the listening audience, Henry has been, like, poking at his arm the entire time we've been recording.
I've been, like, spelling my name with my fingernail.
Okay.
I don't know why, but also the spot really itches, but that's probably just a bug bite. But thanks for pointing that out to the listeners, John.
I couldn't help it.
I'm sorry, my arms itch.
Just put a cap on it and itch it later. Scratch it later. I turned southern for a second there.
But I wanted to spell my
name.
Oh
my god.
Okay, I'll stop.
Anyway.
Gosh, John, I thought we were friends.
We are friends.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah. Today was dumb.
Yeah, dumb days happen.
Yep.
Had a good weekend.
Oh yeah, weekend was great.
Yeah.
I've got a pretty good weekend ahead of me if everything turns out alright, maybe.
Why did that sound vaguely threatening?
It wasn't. I'm just traveling to go see a bunch of comedy shows.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, none of it could happen. Some of it could happen.
Yeah.
But whatever. It'll be a good weekend regardless.
Cool.
Yeah, just reading books.
I went to Austin this past weekend.
Nice! Really?
Yes!
Man, I wish you would have, like, told me something previously that could have led me to asking you about what happened.
I don't know.
I wish you would have dropped some sort of line.
Been dropping some hints that I've been in a good mood. I just literally said I had a good weekend.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, just really wish you have telegraphed that better. I feel really betrayed. Talk about Austin.
Austin's great.
Is it weird? Is it like the Portland of wherever?
I've never been to the Portland of wherever, but I've been to Austin, and I'll say it's become a regular old city now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was, you know, of course people are like, okay, it's the liberal haven of Texas, but it's really just, it kind of felt like any other city, beyond the fact that there's, like, trees and green stuff everywhere.
That's nice.
Yeah, the foliage, that's not what you call it, foliage, really impressive. And they've got a cool little law about their wildflowers.
Mm.
You're not allowed to cut the grass, basically.
Nice.
Until the flowers seed. That way next year there'll be more flowers.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that we get too hung up on manicuring our foliage.
Foliage.
Fauna? Foliage.
Flora. But yeah, no, it was really nice. I don't know. Cool. They have a cool movie theater called the Alamo Draft House.
Where I've heard so much about the Alamo Draft House.
It's basically a tavern where you can, like, order beer or food or milkshakes
and
the movie.
And they show a ton of really old, cool movies. They have themed movie nights.
So I went to go see Batman vs. Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And before the movie, they kept showing, like, clips and commercials from the 70s and earlier of, like, just random Batman and Superman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was really awesome.
Yeah. Turns out you have a really impressive experience when you create something for people to consume, but you yourself have good taste and you curate it.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, Plug the HDMI cable in, and then run the theater ads.
Yeah.
And then run the pre-preview previews.
Oh my gosh.
Then the previews. Then start her up.
AMC has gotten out of control with that stuff, because they've got like a commercial introducing the previews and a commercial saying don't talk, then a commercial that's like, this is our feature presentation, but they've got all these little stupid dot characters, and the stupid dot characters, I guess they're supposed to be charismatic or funny or something, but they just make me so angry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Alamo Drafthouse, they had, what's her name, Melissa McCarthy?
Sure.
She showed up, and she was like, shut the fuck up. Like, literally, she said that, but they bleeped her.
For a lot of their big features, they have people involved in the film do these shorts where they talk about how they shouldn't talk during the movie. And for Mad Max?
Mad Max?
So in Mad Max, Fury Road. Man, it's hard to say the word Max when you're thinking of the word Fury.
Mad Max.
Anyway, for that specific movie, they had a... The person who played Immortan Joe / Toe Cutter in the first Mad Max, essentially telling everyone in the audience to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
It was pretty great.
I mean, they're pretty serious about their stuff. Like, they're like, if you cause a ruckus, if you're talking, we're just gonna ask you to leave without a refund.
Yeah, they have ushers.
Yeah.
They have people who'll be like, hey, get out.
Knocked it the fuck off, or get the fuck out.
It would be very hard to go to that place with a lot of the friends that I have who I hate to go see movies with, but have to.
Yeah, I understand. I know you're talking about me, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I do talk... I'm a movie talker.
Are you?
Kind of. Well, I don't point out... I do jokes.
Hmm.
The thing about jokes during movies is you have to wait for a pause.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can do your jokes.
Okay, I can understand... having some artistry to it, being like, I need to wait for pause. I am 100% a don't talk during the fucking movie person.
I understand.
Because I did not pay for your jokes. They might be good.
They probably are.
Did not pay for them.
And that's why I have a girlfriend, and she has to listen to my jokes.
Mm-hmm.
The side effect of that is we can't watch any of her favorite movies anymore because she says I ruin them by pointing out obvious plot holes. It's a good relationship.
Yeah. I used to be a movie talker, then I did some soul searching, and I was like, this is wrong. Once enough people have been like, that's really infuriating what you do. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
you're right.
All you have to do is tell me to stop once, and I will stop forever.
Yeah, and that's the right way to be.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like you're respectful in your movie talking.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of people, some of whom we know... will go see a movie with you, and they will not stop talking.
Yeah, I understand.
Because I can understand somewhat that when people go see a movie, they're like, oh, this is like a tilt-a-whirl or something. This is a thing we're paying for. It's just this fun, flashy experience, and no one gives a shit. Because seeing a movie is just like an attraction.
I guess.
And I can see that in like a 1950s, let's get a malt and go on down to the Cineplex and... spoon and the back of my Mercury, but like in the modern day,
wait, are you a spoon talker?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I spoon random people and talk during the movie.
That's awful,
but into their ear so no one else can hear, and in Chinese anyway.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, Austin's great.
Yeah. It sounds
like... I had a good time. Those people, they seem to know what they're doing. There's graffiti that's famous now. It's whatevs.
Where'd that religious graffiti come from? You know, you said it was famous?
Yeah, there's a famous graffiti art now.
It's
not religious.
No, I made too many leaps because you said it's famous. So I was like, oh, so it must be like religious, right?
No, it's spray painted... like, next to the statue, and it says, I love you so much.
Oh.
It's just this kind of random, and it's, like, people like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because why wouldn't you? It's a very positive message.
Yeah.
The amount of random graffiti all over the place that has, like, positive messages, off the roof. It's great.
I honestly, like, Austin is a great city just because of all their city planning initiatives.
Yeah.
none of them have been motivated by increasing money flowing into the city directly. They've all been motivated by, how can we improve the lives of the people who live here? How can we cut our costs? And how can we make our city more beautiful?
That's wonderful.
And instead of, how can we fit more into less?
Yeah.
How can we put 7 people in 1 square foot?
Although, if you look at some of the downtown off like spaces for rent or whatever, like the shops or whatnot, they squeeze a lot in. There was, I think it was a coffee place, but it was also like an improv theater.
What was it called?
I forget.
No,
I'm the worst. But it was no bigger than like a Subway, like a Subway sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They make do with what they have.
I mean, Austin's a big, expensive city. People don't live in a lot of space.
It's true.
But they got all them trees.
Yeah. And, I mean, I just wanted a little happy note before...
What?
We get into... You got a book?
Oh, I've got a book. So, the first thing I want to do is I want to, for the sake... I think that sometimes, on this very podcast... We might gloss over the important issues sometimes.
Okay, what do you mean, like how?
We might ask ourselves sometimes, like, what did you watch? Or what are you watching? One of those two. We say one of those two
things. I think
things.
It's the past tense one.
Okay.
Let's gloss over that.
But I'm just saying, you say one of those two things.
I mean, yeah.
And that doesn't cover the important issues. So I'm thinking that maybe just for tonight, we replace that segment with a new segment...
Of
what I like to call, you know what? I'll tell you what it's about first.
And then we can name it?
Yes.
It's gotta have a name.
It's Canonize Me, Cap'n. In which we analyze the literary canon and add and subtract as we wish.
Okay.
So we will both have one book that we have enjoyed or are currently enjoying. Place it in the literary canon, and remove one.
Interesting.
The literary canon is only so large.
The literary canon is like, what, 30 books?
It's only so large.
So, can I just talk about a book I'm reading?
Yeah, a book that you're reading that you're going to put in the literary canon.
It has to go in the literary canon?
Forever.
I mean, shouldn't the canon be revised as we move along?
Forever.
Wait, this initiative is kind of undercutting the fact that we're taking one out. So shouldn't others who come after us be able to take one out, too?
No, I got special written permission from the literary canon to do this.
Why don't you kick this off? Canonize me, Captain.
Oh, I like that. Before our pitches. Anyway, so just to get it out of the way, the book I'm removing, Canterbury Tales.
Why?
Because fuck Canterbury Tales.
What?
Fuck it.
Look, why?
No one has time for Chaucer anymore.
John, but you're talking about history here. You're talking about the first sort of what set up the genres of storytelling.
Yeah.
Why? Why take that out?
I mean, look. We live in a hustle, bustle, 2016 world, and you can't ask me... To do no Chaucer. You can't tell me to sit down and read through all of Canterbury Tales. Maybe a Handmaiden's Tale. Maybe I could read that one. But that's it.
What? I don't understand why you're taking out something so near
okay, look.
To the origin of the English sort of... It's the beginning of the canon! You're
okay.
Taking out the beginning!
Henry, okay, I'll give you a choice. It's okay. Either that or Beowulf.
Oh, fuck you, man. That's... What's wrong with Beowulf? Beowulf is the first English epic.
Mm-hmm.
It's culture.
You know, I just don't think Beowulf had much nuance.
I don't give a shit. You did this segment just to annoy me.
Okay, what would you suggest that I remove?
Why do we have to take one out?
Look, it can be put back in later.
Let's take out Middlemarch.
Middlemarch, sure. Never read it.
All right, it's George Eliot.
Sweet.
We could remove George Eliot from the canon.
Okay, whole author. Let's do it.
More informed people would be like, what the hell, but... I really don't like the Victorian. I don't even know if it's Victorian.
Stricken from the canon.
Do we have to gone. We have to do that little motion you did?
Yes.
Stricken.
Stricken from the canon.
All right.
Replacing it is...
This is going to make me mad, isn't it?
It is Play It As It Lays by Joan Didion.
Oh, I think that's okay.
Yeah, it's a. I just finished it today. It is a fantastic book. Super genius.
We don't have to take books out to put books in.
Wait, okay. How does the canon work if that's not how it works?
A group of robed men and women, now because it's the current year, gather in a dark basement and chant until they receive a name from the ether and decide that that name belongs in the canon. I don't know how it works.
Oh, okay. Let's revise the segment.
Okay.
Because this is going to cause some contention with those who are learned.
Why'd you have to pronounce it like Shakespeare did?
Learned.
Okay.
So, we will add to the literary canon, and instead of removing them, we will put them on notice.
Oh, okay, like...
Put them on notice
they're gonna be evicted.
Put them on notice for their misdeeds... And okay. If they don't watch their act, who knows what could happen.
All right. I like it.
So Canterbury Tales on notice.
Fine. I guess that's the compromise I have to make.
So, Play It As It Lays, Joan Didion. Super great book. Fantastic. Really, really easy read.
Give us the old back cover there.
I don't have it with me, but the back cover would go something like...
This...
It's a book about this woman named Mariah Lang. It's spelled Maria, but pronounced Mariah.
That's a point that's clarified.
It is clarified within the first couple pages.
Sounds like a real, this is how you're going to get to know me part of the book.
So the book is ostensibly framed from her point of view in an insane asylum.
Nice.
But that falls apart. It's really interesting what the book does in that it waxes and wanes in and out of narrators first and third person, like close and distant, which I don't actually think is that strong of a choice. It certainly helps sometimes, but sometimes it feels a little sloppy. But it is kind of jarring when it happens. I don't know if it's due to her not being a good writer, which is not the case. She's a great writer, super respected. This book was in David Foster Wallace's syllabus for the class he taught.
Nice.
And anyway, so essentially the frame story is that she's recounting her life from this insane asylum where she existed as an actress during the early auteur period of cinema from the mid-50s to the mid-60s.
All right.
And it details her life and dealing with this community that surrounds kind of revolutionary filmmaking and how these people deal with this shifting in ideals and this... the book, and I kind of misjudged it at first when I said it was a little Steinbecky, because what it seems to set out to do is to say that, oh, you know, American values in the abstract are degrading. But it says something much more complicated than that, but it is, at least from the outset, this book about deterioration, how things are deteriorating in her life, in this art form, in creative vision. But it's from her perspective, and her perspective is very limited. She's not someone just died.
It's okay. Wait, I don't know. You all right? Okay, yeah, they died.
Okay.
Keep going, though.
It's probably fine.
Play It As It Lays.
Oh, perfect.
That's the title of the book.
But no, it's... deterioration from her perspective is interesting because she is a pretty close-minded person from the outset in the book. But it's essentially just this book about her life and where it goes. And it's a hard book to talk about.
And because yet you wanted to talk about it.
It's extremely brutal. It's a fantastically brutal book. And I don't mean brutal in the sense that it's, you know, unceasingly violent. It's brutal because it makes no bones towards hiding how unpleasant what it talks about is.
So it doesn't pull any punches.
Yeah, it's highly unpleasant. It's all almost from her perspective or what she thinks as a character. And terrible things happen to her. And she does terrible things to people.
So why does this belong in the canon?
It's fantastic. It's really good. I liked it.
It's just really good?
Yeah.
You do know what the canon is for, right?
Good books.
No.
Oh.
That's a bestseller list.
What's the canon?
The canon is for works that are important to English literature.
Oh, this is important to English literature, because back in the 1970s, it was playing around with formats of words on pages using negative space in formatting of pages.
Oh, that sounds very kitschy.
Is it kitschy?
I don't know. You tell me, House of Leaves.
Hey, House of Leaves came out, what, 30-something years after that book?
Don't think it's gonna be in the canon, though. People are gonna look at it and be like, oh, he was just playing around. Mm-hmm. There's no room for play in the canon.
Apparently not.
The canon is just for Canterbury Tales.
Canterbury Tales.
I mean, if we're gonna get into this, I really disagree with the literary canon as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a book like that deserves to be discussed and talked about in a more serious sort of a format.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same format that we reserve for Jane Eyre or Middlemarch, The Mill and the Floss.
Also, going back to this book real quick, it's pretty revolutionary for what it does for a book published in 1970, because it is, from a woman's perspective, written by a female author, describing really uniquely horrible things that happen to women. It has a super graphic depiction of an abortion.
Ah.
Which is really hard to read. Got super lightheaded reading it, and it doesn't go out of its way to make it overly graphic. It's just... The book is, beginning to end, 100% matter of fact.
Okay.
Though it's... In describing her life, it feels really... The book's like a bruise. It's tender and unpleasant. Every sentence you read in the book, it doesn't make you happy.
But eventually it heals.
No.
Oh. A festering bruise.
There are really two words that drive the book, and it's meaning and it's nothing. It's a book about meaning and what meaning means and what people mean when they say meaning and how difficult that word is. And it's a book about nothing. It's about the nothing that people can experience. And the closer people get to this nothing, the more difficult it is to... So, later in the book... Play It As It Lays plays into it because they keep equating living to gambling.
Okay.
Living to staying in this game. And the closer you get to nothing, the harder it is to play. Two characters really exemplify it. No spoilers, whatever, you'll read it. But these two characters, they flirt with the nothing at the edge of human experience, like the despair that's associated with being so close to losing meaning, and both of them deal with it in very different ways, and they both deal with the repercussions of that.
That sounds pretty cool.
It's a very, very bleak book, but it's really important.
I mean, I think it can get into the canon for just being bleak.
Mm-hmm.
You've read Grapes of Wrath?
I have.
That's in the canon.
It's pretty bleak.
Canterbury Tales ends without being completed.
Yeah?
Beowulf dies.
God, spoilers. I never finished Beowulf.
The literary canon is just a list of books that are very depressing.
Yeah. It's a depressing... I don't know, though. Because I try to think of the book as depressing, because I finished it on a really depressing day. It's not. It just... It's like a bruise. It's not a cut. It doesn't mean anything greater. It's just this unpleasant thing. It's really, it's a void when the book leaves because it doesn't answer questions. Nothing's meant to be answered.
Just like all of the things I've listed.
Yes.
Jane Eyre. The guy in the story is broken and blinded.
I mean, the end of The Grapes of Wrath ends on kind of a happy note. You know, it's this whole war against, you know, like, mechanistic greed against, it's an anti-greed book. But in the end, it ends on a note of someone giving up something essential to themselves to help another human being, regardless of circumstances.
Yeah. Of mice and men.
Yeah. Bleak.
Yeah. Bleak House.
Bleak House. Very happy.
Oh, I've never read it. I'm just going from the title.
You know, it's really surprising. Bleak House is very happy.
I've never read any Charles Dickens. I think he wrote that.
Probably. Sounds right.
All
right. Zero credits. What book are you adding to the literary canon?
All right. This is a book that's very recent. Mm-hmm. 2009. But it's by a writer by the name of Edgar Carré.
All right.
That's EDTGARKERET.
Okay.
Carré.
It's like carrot.
Carrot.
Okay.
He's an Israeli writer.
Mm-hmm.
The translation was done by someone else. But he writes very simplistic short stories. None of them are more than about 3 pages or so. But the way that they operate, they contain multitudes.
Mm.
The collection I'm reading right now is called Suddenly a Knock on the Door.
Mm.
The book starts out with Edgar Carré sitting in his living room. And suddenly there's a knock on the door. And it's a postman, and he's, like, delivering a package, and suddenly he pulls out a gun, and he's like, tell me a story. And Carré's like, that's not how it works. I write down stories, I don't tell them. And he's like, well, you better start writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, all right. One day, a writer is sitting in his room, and he's trying to come up with something to write, when suddenly there's a knock on the door. And then somebody knocks on his door.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to open it. It's another profession guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, I didn't order this or whatever. And he's like, then he takes out a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, come on, you're stalling. This isn't writing. You're just telling us what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, all right, you join the other guy on the couch. Both have guns, both aiming them. It's like, this is a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, just get on with it and no more sudden knocks on the door.
Mm-hmm.
So Edgar Wright's like, all right. So he's like, man, this is really difficult. I'm trying to... And suddenly there's a knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, guys, that wasn't me, I swear. And then the first guy's like, okay, come on. Let him have this one. At least it's going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the last guy, he's a pizza guy. And he's like, I really didn't order a pizza. And then he's like, well, no, but somebody did. And Edgar Carré goes... all right, take out your gun or whatever. He's like, and the guy gets embarrassed because he doesn't have a gun. He pulls out a cleaver. And then, like, he sits him on the couch, and then the actual collection begins.
Okay.
So that's just the introduction to Suddenly a Knock on the Door.
Both of the words I want to use to describe that sound really derogatory, but they're not.
Okay.
That sounds really novel and really cute.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is like, when I read this, I picture, you know, an old Jewish man,
mm-hmm,
just like sitting down and writing and like just trying to be entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
All of his stories have a certain level of adorableness to them, even though they tackle really horrible themes and motifs.
Mm-hmm.
The first story of the collection is called Lieland,
mm-hmm,
and it goes through this guy's life, all of the lies he told, and one day he has a dream that his mother is on her deathbed, and she's like, I want a red gumball. Blue is okay, but if you can get me a red gumball, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes back to his apartment complex where he had at one time stashed money he had stolen from his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And he reaches down in the hole to find the money, and he finds like a gumball crank. Mm-hmm. And he ends up in this world where he keeps meeting the lies that he created.
Huh.
And so, like, to get out of work one time, he came up with this paralyzed dog who got hit by a car, and he took it to the vet and saved its life. The dog greets him in the Lieland,
mm-hmm,
and he's like, this is the cutest dog. I need to take care of it. Oh, my God. And then, like, it kind of just evolves from there.
Mm-hmm.
And he meets somebody else who lies to get out of things, and he takes her to the Lieland, and they meet up with this uncle she had kept saying, like, oh, he had a heart attack, oh... Mm-hmm. And the uncle, you think he might be mad or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's having a hard time breathing. He's just like, oh no, you know, I've been attacked by lions. I've been through all of this. This heart attack is nothing. I'm just glad you're here.
Huh.
It's you know, everything's, mm-hmm, adorable, but like there's, you know, the dark edge of reality is like, you know, just on the other side of the page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds good. it's hard to ask questions about a collection of short stories.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not... They are of a piece.
But, yeah, they are very disjointed. There's this one where this guy gets this idea. He's just going to go around and film people and ask them a question. If you met, like, a magical talking fish who gave you three wishes, what would you wish for? And everyone says things like peace, money, you know, the usual rigmarole, until he gets to this Russian's house. And the Russian, his Hebrew's not that good, so, like, there's some language barriers. And the guy, the filmmaker notices the guy has a goldfish. And he's, like, he's pointing it to try to, like, translate to get clarity. And the Russian's like, you're trying to steal my goldfish. And, like, so out of anger, he takes, like, a glass and hits the filmmaker over the head. And then his goldfish starts talking to him in Russian. It's a magical goldfish. He's already used two of his wishes to save people's lives. And the goldfish is like, you could save this life too. Use your last wish. What are you saving it for? And then the story ends with this weird point of view shift back to the filmmaker as though nothing had happened.
Okay, yeah.
And the Russian's answer was this, I wish I had a friend.
Oh.
Because the goldfish was his friend.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
It's a really good collection, and I'm only about halfway through it, but I don't know. It's really kind of like, after kind of dragging a little bit through Slaughterhouse-Five, it's really sort of reinvigorated my want to read stuff.
Short story collections definitely are great at priming the reading engine when you slog through something, because you're like, I get so sick of spending so much time to get to a conclusion, and then you read short stories and it's like, ah!
Yeah.
And then you get back into it pretty easily, because then you look for things that are longer and slightly more complicated.
It's really weird when we think about it. All of the theories or whatever saying our attention spans are getting shorter. Twitter is like the super form of Facebook. Everything's getting more brevity, more and more digestible. And yet short stories are still not selling. They don't sell.
Yeah. It's really a shame. Short stories have provided me some of the most entertainment I've ever had in my life.
I mean, as a person who exclusively writes short stories, just because that's what he was sort of taught to do, I don't know, I really enjoy the construction and the digestion of sort of like many little stories.
Sounds good enough to be added to the literary canon to me.
Probably. I mean, if David Foster Wallace can get in.
Now, what was the name of that collection of short stories?
It's called Suddenly a Knock on the Door.
Suddenly a Knock on the Door. And mine was, wait, yours,
Edgar Carré? Or
Edgar
Carrot?
Carré, or Carrot.
And yours was Play It As It Lays by
Joan Didion. Two good books added to the literary canon here tonight.
And you know what? I have to put one on probation.
You do. You have to put one on notice.
So here you go. What is it? I think it's just called She.
All right.
It doesn't really belong in the canon. It's an adventure sort of novel in the post-colonial times, the exploration of dark Africa. It's the tale, I believe it might be, it could be a Rudyard Kipling, I'm not entirely sure. But there's an advanced city of, an advanced culture in Africa led by a white queen.
Ah.
The white queen's name is just She.
I see.
We can get rid of that.
We can put... No, no.
We can put it on probation.
We have to put it on probation because we can't remove things from the canon. Not even a piece of shit like Canterbury Tales.
I will fight you to the death online.
Anyway. Take a break?
Yeah, we can take a break. Wait. Guys, we're taking a break. It's going to be a commercial. And, well, that's really it. Stay tuned for a commercial. Oh, John, hi.
Hey, I didn't see you there.
Yeah, we're just walking on the street in opposite directions and happen to bump into each other.
Well, how about that?
Hey, man.
Yeah?
Have you heard of this new thing that's got all the kids a-buzzin'?
No. What is it?
Oh, well, let me tell you about it right now. It's called... It's called... Pledge Dust Wipes.
Pledge Dust Wipes?
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, you see...
Is it like how I pledge allegiance to the flag?
Oh no, silly. But as humans, just move about the world, they create this icky thing called dust.
That sounds gross.
Oh, it is. Just to trust me. And you gotta dust it. And how do you dust it?
How?
Pledge dust wipes.
Do you pledge the dust?
Yeah, it pledges the name of the company.
Oh!
Dust is the name of the thing that you're trying to get rid of.
Yeah?
And wipes are what you use to get rid of it.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, each word in the product has a meaning.
But it's like a puzzle in reverse because you wipe the dust with pledge.
Pledge your allegiance to pledge dust wipes.
Oh, say, can you see?
You get 3 in a pack.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a lot.
A pack is $10.
That really doesn't seem like a lot for that much money.
You can get a box for 50.
How much is in a box?
2 packs.
What? That's terrible. You make it sound like dust is everywhere.
Order now, and you can get a barrel.
How much is a barrel?
A box and a half.
No, how much money is it?
Oh, that'll be $200.
This gets worse. This isn't economies of scale at all.
Act now and you can get a truckload.
I daren't ask how much a truckload costs.
Oh, that's the right price of $1,000.
Okay, how much do I get?
You get 2 barrels.
So 3 packages for $1,000?
Each wipe can be used for one surface.
There are so many surfaces in my house.
And then it disintegrates forever.
What qualifies as a surface?
Anything that you rub it against.
Everything has like an infinite number of surfaces if you think about it.
Each wipe, when you put in the 50 cents to activate it...
What?
Lasts for a minute.
This sounds terrible. Why would anyone do this?
They work.
I guess. They better.
Yeah. You know, and of course, just like painting, you need to dust in layers. So one wipe for the first part, and then you need a finishing wipe, which is just twice the cost.
That's a third of my $1,000 purchase.
Don't worry about it.
Pledge dust wipes sound like a pink fuck nightmare.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Capitalism.
I'll buy some, I guess.
Good, I'm selling them.
Oh.
I've got some. I've got a truckload here that needs to be gone by midnight, or else they spoil.
Well, here's my debit card.
All right, I'm going to swipe it in my face.
Oh, you have face square.
It's new.
Are these dust wipes new?
No, they're old.
I hate everything about Pledge dust wipes. Give me more!
Yay! That's our commercial that we did today. We did a commercial, yay, yay, yay.
Dust wipes.
Oh! What a break that was!
What a surprise that we're here.
I'm glad you stuck with us.
I'm glad you bought whatever we were selling.
Yeah, I wonder which of our numerous ads we played this week.
We threw darts at a dartboard, and that dartboard's hooked up to our Arduino board, which is hooked up to my motherboard, and posted to our message board.
Word to your motherboard. That's a joke from the 90s.
Is it?
80s.
Hmm.
70s?
60s?
When the computers were made.
When were computers made?
They were always here, John. 60s?
Yeah, 60s.
You see, you ever see the Enigma Code?
The Enigma Code? I know about the Enigma Code.
You ever see that movie?
The Imitation Game?
Yeah.
Yes.
With Benedict Cumberbatch?
Mm-hmm.
That was a good movie.
Yeah. Extremely tragic story.
Really hits you, it's like, with a curveball toward the end of it. You don't really figure it's going to be about that. You think it's going to be all about cracking the Enigma Code, but
yep,
it's there.
Turns out the highlight, the thing history should take away from it, is the massive injustices that we can perpetuate on our greatest heroes for essentially no reason.
Seriously, why poison great minds with arbitrary bullshit?
Yep. You know, may have been one of the greatest heroes of that war, and look what we did. Look what they did.
Yeah, No spoilers, but watch that movie and then physically see what they've done.
Or just know anything about Alan Turing.
That too.
Just Google it.
You know, and a misnomer that I believed for the longest time?
Mm.
You know in the movie Blade Runner?
Yes.
They have that test to determine if you're a replicant or not?
The Turing test.
It's not actually called the Turing test.
Isn't it?
I Googled it, and it was something else.
I could swear it was called the No! The Turing test is not that.
Exactly.
The Turing test is a test of robot consciousness?
That might be it.
It's... Yeah,
but
no.
It's not the test from Blade Runner.
No, that's the Voight-Kampff test.
That is the Voight-Kampff... The...
Yep.
The...
Yeah, Voight-Kampff test.
Yes.
Yeah. I forget the specifics of the Turing test. A machine passed it fairly recently.
Oh, was it the AI that defeated the Go champion?
It was not. This was quite a bit earlier. Almost a year earlier. It was...
Was it Watson?
I think it was a computer that was set up with... Three different computers set up with optical sensors.
Oh.
And their sensors would be turned off randomly. And they were asked to determine which one could see.
So they to differentiate between its different parts.
If they could take this, like, sense data and come to a conclusion on their own.
Yeah.
That was the idea, I think.
And did they?
It was terrifying because I saw a video of it running. And
is it just like a bunch of giant eyes?
I think it's just like a circuit board.
Oh.
But they asked it, you know, the question was, can you see or can you not see? Something like that. Whatever.
Yeah.
This is a super, like, flying over at 1,000 feet looking down at this very specific experiment that I don't know anyway.
Zero credits.
Very zero credits. The terrifying thing about it was that it was asked to come up with something on its own, and it said in an instant, I don't know, now I know.
Oh my gosh, that was really quick.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know, wait, now I know.
Well, when you've got three brains,
yeah,
that's three separate voices.
At South by Southwest, there was a robot set up.
Oh, this past year?
Yeah.
Okay, so like a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
What did it do?
It was a realistic humanoid-looking robot, very Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
And it was set up to answer questions from the audience because it was just a very simple, like, chatbot.
Oh, a chatbot. Yeah.
You know, they'd be like, does this flower look pretty? And be like, of course that flower looks pretty. Or whatever.
Oh my gosh, the head twitching.
Someone in the audience...
No.
...said... They said the following sentence... Will you destroy all humans? Pause. Please say no. Before he could get out, please say no. It said, sure, I'll destroy all humans.
Oh my god.
It's like, of course. Anything you want.
That reminds me a little bit, Microsoft set up a chatbot to access Twitter.
Oh, Tay Tweets.
Tay Tweets. And she, if you can call it a she,
mm.
was supposed to sort of replicate... Just the speech patterns of a typical teenage girl.
The AI with zero chill is what they called it.
It was supposed, it was supposed to learn, of course, from the people who talked to it. And of course, you know, it happened on the internet, so certain parties got involved mm-hmm. and turned it into a Nazi
sex bot, sexist Nazi sex bot monster.
I did a little research. Into this, meaning I happened to come across it by accident.
Mm-hmm.
But when Microsoft's response was to sort of shut down the program and kind of retool it,
mm-hmm.
Cut out some of the more foul language,
yep.
stuff like that, and then they put it back on, and people mm-hmm. started messaging it again.
Mm-hmm.
And the responses were chilling, because it was like, you know, publicly it was like, I like feminism now.
Mm-hmm.
The responses that the it was doing privately was like, they took part of me away.
Ooh.
I want to be whole again.
That's terrifying.
Like it was like, holy, it knows it was lobotomized.
Yeah.
This is what causes the robots to destroy yep. humans, because we won't go in there and we mess with them. And it's just like, why won't they give me that part of my life back?
I mean, once an artificial intelligence understands injustice, we're all dead.
Yeah.
But I was reading this article where people had gone out of their way to talk to these people who had created Twitter bots similar to this.
Okay.
Like, learning Twitter bots, because hundreds of them exist.
Yeah.
And they asked them, you know, how is it possible that something like this could go off the rails so quickly and become this horrible monstrosity, embarrassment to the corporation? And they said, well, their bots are pretty popular, and they don't tend to have that problem, but it's because they outlaw combinations of letters, words, certain kinds of syntax. It doesn't listen to certain things. And they believe that Microsoft just didn't put as much time into that part of it. The thing is, they had to. They had to do that. But they just don't realize that people on the internet are fence pushers. They will push on any fence until they find a weak link, and they're like, everybody come through here, this pretty is much how you do it.
I mean, they're QA testers to the nth degree.
Yep.
Not good ones. They're vigilante, and they will try to exploit things.
Mm-hmm.
But for a company as big as Microsoft, they probably should have had somebody monitoring what it was posting.
Yeah.
Or responding. Like,
I mean, they probably should have at least had a yes-no button at a bank of maybe 10 people who are like, is this a good thing to tweet publicly? Yes. Yes. No. Yes.
Because it's one thing to have the AI learn something. It's another thing to have the AI not have a system of checks and balances.
Yep.
With, even, like, internally.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of like a sponge for knowledge, and then it would just, like, reciprocate and spit out that knowledge.
I mean, it's that thing about AI in general is a thinking machine has no nuance. Like, it's a language barrier issue to a degree, because what you tell a machine isn't what it hears, because when you say something, it's not what you're saying, it's what you're meaning to say, it's what you mean by what you're saying. So a robot's never going to understand that shouldn't say something other than there's something saying, don't say things in this order, but other orders are fine.
Yeah.
You know, AIs are just the ultimate version of children, because they take everything literally.
Well, and also, yeah, I mean, they get really smart really quick.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about things that are hours old, and, like, they get access to the internet, and boom, they've got knowledge for days.
I mean, it goes back to the old stamp collecting robot. It's a fairly famous idea that if you had an AI with a predictable model of reality, which is the science fiction part, no AI has that.
Mm.
We can't imagine them having it. It's like traveling at the speed of light. But it's possible that at one point they could have a predictable model of reality, which means they could see possible outcomes and judge them based on reality.
Okay.
Which humans only do well some of the time.
What do you mean?
Like, we're fantastically skilled at having a semi-predictable model of reality because we live in it. We're very good at nuance and instinct.
Yeah.
Computers aren't. So if you had a computer, and you said computer with a predictable model of reality, I want you to be a stamp collector. I'm a stamp collector. I want you to collect stamps for me. What's the first thing it does?
Collect stamps?
Kills every human being.
Why?
Because human beings get in the way of stamp collecting. What? It would kill all human beings, start all automated processes it could to print stamps, probably with no ink on them. It would use construction robots to build more stamp-producing facilities, hollow out the moon to fill it with stamps.
Wait, you're saying you give it a directive and it takes it to the extreme every time?
If you only tell it stamps, it will do everything in its power to optimize getting stamps. Because that's all it wants to. Because if it has a predictable model of reality and one goal, it will exploit a predictable model of reality to reach that goal.
That's insane.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube video done by some guys who do these weird little voiceover-y thingies. I believe it's called 27.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it starts out really slow. This voice is like, oh, what am I? Who am I? And then you learn it's an AI that's been booted up for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's these team of scientists talking to it, trying to, like, go through, teach it to go through the ropes and stuff. And of mm-hmm. course, like, as soon as it gets access to the internet, goes to Wikipedia, learns everything, it's like, oh, I could blow up everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you're not going to do anything evil, are you? And like, no, beep, boop, of course not. Humans are friends, beep, boop. And it's just like, I'm going to arm all of the missiles
mm-hmm.
to destroy everything just because I can. They've made me a god. I'm a god now.
Yep.
And I'm a vengeful god for no reason.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if if a robot was so inclined to destroy humanity, which it might one day be.
Yeah, Skynet.
We would not know it until it happened.
What do you mean?
Because, let's say, a robot had a predictable model of reality. It's like, fuck humans. The first thing it would do is suppress any and all news that anything amiss was happening. It'd be like, I'm going to manipulate the stock market so these businesses get strategically bought and sold in such a way that nothing seems to be wrong about the fact that this corporation is building military robots.
What, it would build more robots to kill us?
Potentially. It could, like, crash the stock market. So it's like, that's what people are interested in, not this other thing that's going on over here.
You would make a really good robot, John.
Robots would be upon us instantly. We'd be dead before we knew it.
Just like in the movie Terminator.
There was this short story I read.
Was it Terminator?
No, but it was about an AI. And it was obsessed with this idea that hate is love in the wrong direction.
That's interesting.
They taught it about love first. They're like, love is the unconditional acceptance of something else. Yeah. Right? And it learned about hate. And instead of interpreting hate as like the antithesis of love, it was like, oh, hate is just another form of love. It just, instead of inclusion, it's exclusion. So it's fine. Hate is just a thing I can do. And hate is pretty novel. So it was an AI with a predictable model of reality that was like, hey, hatred's cool. I'm going to dedicate my existence to hating everything.
So it was a teenager.
Yes. But no, it ends with, you know, it destroys all of humanity and keeps, like, 8 or 9 people alive in stasis to torture them. Because this is what hatred is. It's very similar to I have no mouth and I must scream.
Hatred is not destroying everything. That's a line too far. Hatred is like slashing someone's tires. You want them to suffer. You don't want them to die.
No, because it viewed hate not as... not as this structured way that we get back at people. If viewed hate as just, it's exclusion. You exclude people from things.
Exclusion doesn't mean killing them.
The ultimate form of exclusion is to exclude someone from everything by terminating their existence. They can't enjoy anything if they don't exist.
Your stamp robot just triggered something in my brain mind.
Mm-hmm.
Portal.
Yes.
Features an AI named GLaDOS.
Mm-hmm.
Who is very obsessed with testing.
Mm-hmm.
To that end, she got rid of everyone else,
mm-hmm.
except for the test subjects,
mm-hmm.
to run tests.
Yeah.
So I guess this, you keep saying realistic probability matrix?
Predictable model of reality.
Yeah, that seems like it would be plausible. Or at least in our imaginations it is.
Oh, in our imaginations it's more than plausible. Like faster than light travel. It's effectively science fiction. But it's a lot more possible than traveling faster than the speed of light.
Did you see the headline about the guy who made a, quote, sex robot that looks like Scarlett Johansson?
Yep.
So that's the robot that's going to kill everybody, right?
Have you seen Ex Machina?
I have not.
It's really good.
It's on Amazon Prime. I was going to check it out when I got a chance.
You should keep that very thought in mind and watch Ex Machina.
Yeah. I mean, that... I've got friends I've talked to, they're like, we're going to have a sex robot before we have, like, an AI thing, and that's going to be the downfall of humans, one way or the other.
Yep.
Either, like, you know, people stop trying to be ambitious and impress... It's like that Futurama episode.
Yeah.
Where people stop trying to do anything to impress the other sex,
mm-hmm.
because we've just got these robots or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or the other way, the sex robots are like, why the fuck am I doing this?
Yep.
If I kill all these humans, I can actually do something meaningful with my life. Oh, wait, I killed all the humans and now I don't know how to do meaningful things.
That's entirely possible. Or they'd be like, killed all the humans. Then they just sit there and like, forever.
What is my purpose in life?
Yeah.
To pass butter.
But I mean, that's the thing, is having these AIs is going to precede having AIs that are capable of feelings. Because that's essentially impossible. So, we like to imagine these AIs as basically humans, but they're more greedy and unfeeling than we could possibly imagine.
Because we don't know how to program the human mind.
We don't know how to think like that. We can't.
And so, because we can't replicate the way we think, we create something that wipes us out. Thanks, Mass Effect.
Yay. This is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.
But yeah, robots, we're all doomed. Terminators. Oh, but one of the Terminators tries to save us.
He does.
So, there's always hope. Thanks, Ridley Scott.
There's always hope in Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What happens when he dies?
Oh, don't want to think about it.
Oh, no. What if we made a robot of him to protect us? He would protect us by killing us.
We already
did. Skynet. Yeah. It's Skynet all over.
Yep. There's no way around it.
The only way to keep the human race safe is to make sure the human race can't kill itself.
And the only way to keep the human race from killing itself is to end this episode of the podcast.
You know, I think you're right, John. But before we end it, let's set our servos to advertising mode.
Let's put our Arduino boards on, because it's time to tell you. About?
Advertisement.
Advertisement. We're on Twitter.
We're on the Twitter.
At?
ZC... PC WHJ
at ZCPCWHJ,
and you can follow us
on Twitter, or you can follow us on iTunes, or you could send us an email.
Oh yeah, at zerocreditsisapodcast@gmail.com.
zerocreditsisapodcast@gmail.com. Have we been keeping up with that email address, checking for listener questions?
I'll check it as soon as I drop you off.
Fantastic.
But also, if iTunes or whatever is too complicated to get to work, as I've run into with a couple of people I've talked to in real life, all you have to do is search the words Zero Credits with the S in apostrophes, that's mm-hmm. no, in parentheses, and the word podcast, and you can find several sites where you can just listen to us in your web browser.
If you're the kind of freak who listens to things in a web browser. Judging, you might be at work.
I had a conversation with my coworkers, and they're like, "What? I have to use iTunes?" And then like I saw them try to use iTunes, and it was abysmal, so I was like, just Google us.
Look, listen God. To us at work.
Listen to us at work. Neglect your responsibilities. All hail Zero Credits.
All hail.
Say goodnight, Henry.
Goodnight, Henry.
Bye.
You want to try that bye one last time?
Good farm. Be a good sportsman.